You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Around the NFL podcast is sorry you didn't get that quarterback you wanted.
Welcome to another edition of Around the NFL, a very special edition of Around the NFL, the post-draft edition of Around the NFL. Seven rounds in the books. And now we're going to talk about it. Dan Hans is here, Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler. It really does feel, finally, Mark, the end of the yellow brick road. As we're going to have a great episode today. We're going to dig in on winners and losers. We're going to go check in on our sandwich props. We're just going to really kind of put this draft to bed. And then we are on some level set free until training camp.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think day three of the draft it's a long haul. But I was thinking today as we were creeping from the sixth round into the seventh that back in the days in old Culver in the old newsroom when the four of us would be, you know, together in our cube farm waiting for it to end, that the minute the show would end, Wes would lead the way out of the newsroom to a local tavern somewhere in Culver City, downtown Culver, and we would
typical it would be Rocco's.
It was often, and like we would sell or the Cozy, but we would celebrate what you're just mentioning, that this is a pivot point, a turning point in what is an off season that barely exists until now.
I don't know, Dan. You know, we got around the AFC and NFC coming up this week. We got projected starter series is coming back.
You know exactly what I mean, 13. Greg Rosenthal.
No, and I love it. I do love the feeling, and I can feel it on day two once like you start seeing these rosters, because after day two, it's guys you're not expecting to play much. Kind of get filled in, and you have enough of your answers, and it's like, okay, now we've kind of got the talking points. We've got the teams that we're going to be talking about, and I'm ready to go.
And yeah, of course, the show will continue throughout the rest of the spring and into the summer, and we're going to have a lot of fun. But in terms of like what's coming up, what lies ahead, the draft was kind of the end of the beginning of the end. That sounds right. And now we're going to talk about it. And we kind of have a tradition on this Saturday show. We do it winners and losers style. So why don't we get it going? And Greg, why don't you get us started?
Okay. I'm going to start with the Washington Commanders, who I don't know if we gave full, like, throated enthusiasm because we knew Jaden Daniels was going to be the pick there at two, and it is a really exciting time for their franchise to totally restart with a quarterback that's exciting. And then you look at what they did on day two of the draft, and you had so many picks. And you know I was going to make the first winner, the team that finally stopped the slide of my boy Johnny Newton. Who, maybe he fell because of that foot surgery, but I think they got a great, great value. He's going to be ready, apparently, for the offseason at 36. They get another player who I think can play right away in the slot cornerback from Michigan, Mike Sanders, still. And again, it's a reminder, they loaded up on draft picks. I'm not going to pretend I have like a ton of hot takes for their other third and fourth round picks. They get a blocking tight end in the second round, but a bunch of day two picks. And you remember, oh yeah, they gave up Chase Young. They gave up Montez Sweat. their owner, Josh Harris, kind of stepped in with the idea of like, this season with Ron Rivera is unimportant. Everything is about the future. They have a ton of day one and two picks. Jaden Daniels is going to be exciting. I love these second round picks. And it's just like a lot of young guys. It's a nice start. And I think the idea that they had of trading Sweat and Young, it made sense for that team ultimately. And they're going to bear the fruits of it after this draft.
I love that you went here first. I'm totally with you. And, you know, Mike Sanders still, the nickelback, like Nick Saban called him pound for pound the best football player in the entire draft. I mean, and that's not someone that's going to heap false praise on someone. They got Newton. It definitely comes down to how Jaden Daniels winds up. But I thought it was a big victory for Adam Peters, the GM, too, because, you know, this is a team that's been in chaos and in the abyss for a long time. And he did a number of interviews. He was willing to go on with Bill Belichick and friends on ESPN and, you know, others beyond that. And I thought he laid out the plan well. You get a sense, because I think when you're a fan, we're in a savvier time where, like, you want to know that your GM is not a head case. And, like, he came across as someone with a clear direction, and that's something this team's been missing for a long time. They feel like a completely different team. I think when you come out of the offseason process, whether it's free agency and the draft, and you feel like, wait a minute, this is a completely different experience, that's a victory, at least emotionally for now.
Took a third-round guard, by the way. But the offensive line still needs some work. So it's a shaky offensive line, and Cliff Kingsbury is your OC. That's the only concerns, but otherwise it's exciting.
Those are pretty big concerns. I think it's good that you added that part of it. But I agree with what you said. In fact, the Commanders were going to be my first choice as well. And I was going to then mention Adam Peters, because he does also benefit from, you know, we all get sometimes lucky or unlucky in life with timing. He is absolutely a benefactor of some fortuitous timing. And when he gets to the Washington football team, post Dan Snyder, post that messy transition Rivera year, and now they can really start this thing up. And it does feel like such a fresh start for the organization. Daniels, the way it all worked out, you know, they feel very excited about him. Maybe it was a little sloppy that week leading up to the draft, but it already feels like an ancient story now about the way they handled the visits near the end. Now he's their quarterback. Newton is a highly regarded guy as a second round pick. They are a team that they're going to be worth watching now. There's been a few teams in the league that have been very hard to watch for many years in a row. And this draft, you come out of it, and the Commanders are one of those teams where, like, okay, this is going to be fun now. Well, there's a reason when we do our draft on Thursday for games each Sunday, why you're not going to avoid the Commanders. And credit to Peters and the organization and Josh Harris, who I don't think is going to walk into any restaurant and take someone else's hat off and tell them what for. I mean, that guy seems to have his act together as well. So good job by the Commanders. Good job, fans. This could be an exciting era for the team about to commence.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other team that you'd mentioned, Dan, when you talk about like snooze fest for years in a row that you just simply avoid unless they were playing like a sexy operation on the other side. The Bears, I mean, they've been a problematic watch for so long. And like, I think I was thinking about like when you go to Pro Football Reference and you look at like a draft from 4 or 5 years ago, and it's like either the name is highlighted in bold because they're still active, or it's not because they're not playing football anymore. And I really don't care what happened. They didn't have a lot of picks in this draft, but if you get to a point a couple years from now that Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze are still operating for Chicago and doing what you hope they're doing, this is a completely different team. And they have just as much as Washington, but over the course of two off seasons, are completely transformed. And I think Caleb Williams is a big winner, because there were these floating questions about the millennial nature of him and all this stuff that I think is garbage that he put to bed, I think, with his own personality. He did a great job right when he was drafted. He seems so proud to be a quarterback for the Chicago Bears. That's been a long time coming. And you found this wide receiver at number 9 that was like, this is ideal. And so I think the combination of them, but the rest of the roster, Matt Eberflus was a largely anonymous coach two off seasons ago. You're starting to realize like this GM and coach together, the whole Chicago Bears situation looks so much more promising that I put them right there with Washington as a team that you feel completely different about. And it's like, I'll be annoyed if Greg is drafting the Bears, early on in week 1 or week 2 next year, because I want to watch them now. And I've not felt that way about the former Mitch Trubisky-led Bears in a billion years. So that's new territory for me.
It's like, fine. If you're going to put them in primetime five or six times like they seem to with the Bears every year, now we get Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. I'm with you. I also like that they had this third-round tackle that, like, a lot of times players say they're, oh, I was a fan with the team growing up. You know, I was always a fan. It's like, now we've, in the age of Twitter, you can go and see it. His name is Kieran Amagadje, a tackle from Yale, and they found his tweets just railing the play calling from like 4 years ago, saying, I love watching both our tackles get beat at the same time as like Nick Foles got rocked. Our leading rusher is a linebacker for 11 yards. Make the pain stop, please. How come no one can call plays on this team? I just love like seeing like now a player on the team can see if he wants to complain about the play calling. But I like their play caller. I like.
So, winners, Commanders. Mark, yours was
the Bears.
Right. And you guys are killing me because that you've now hit the both the ones I was going to talk about.
The Bears was almost too obvious.
But you got to lead with those two, I think.
The
right?
Bears, the Bears, like, how could you do better than they did?
So what are you saying? That you're saying that Mark shouldn't have brought it up? And
no, it was my two. I just mean, like, you get anyone is getting too cute mentioning teams before the Bears. Maybe I was too cute even. It's like, how can you win it more than Caleb Williams? And
do you not, Dan, do you not have a third winner in this selection process?
I would say I'm definitely a loser in the winners section in terms of the timing. but I'll find a way to get even. I'll say that. It's so striking the difference 1 year makes. What happened with Bryce Young in Carolina as the number one overall pick, and the way I hope teams learn from that, and putting a kid into the starting lineup with nothing around him is a recipe for disaster. And that was kind of a perfect storm of poop for the Panthers, because to get to that number one pick, you had to trade your number one wide receiver when you didn't have much behind him at all. So you took away this you know, gifted young player in DJ Moore, and then you get the number one guy you want. Forget about the CJ Stroud component, but just the idea of not having any help around. And I'm blown away by the difference for Caleb Williams, who has Shane Waldron coaching him. He has DJ Moore, as I said, on the outside. You have this fantastically exciting rookie prospect in Rome Odunze. And we know that wide receivers can hit the ground running as big time producers. So that's a possibility here, that DJ Moore, who I think was a 1500 yard receiver with a ton of touchdowns, now has a potential superstar joining him. And oh, by the way, Keenan Allen is on this team. And Keenan Allen, before he got injured last year, was on pace for like 130 catches. So that's how you do it. I mean, they'll have to block for him, obviously, and the running game will have to do its work, but he is so set up well. And I should mention DeAndre Swift also was added to this team, and that's a guy who can make plays out of the backfield as a pass receiver too. So, you know, I think from number one overall pick, like, confidence in a player hitting the ground running when you combined his pedigree and what we think that this player is, Caleb Williams, now with what he's joining, the Bears can instantly be a threat in the NFC, and that's an exciting thought, I know, for Bears fans.
Maybe the best division in football now. And that Packers Bears game, I mean, that could be like Sunday night week one, I feel like.
Let's flip it over to losers, and I'll start with the Dallas Cowboys. It's been a tough offseason for the Dallas Cowboys, and I thought there was a chance here that they would hit on the draft in a way that was exciting, and it doesn't really matter if it's buzzy. Ultimately, the guys that they pick have to play, like Tyler Guyton, their offensive tackle out of Oklahoma. They take an edge rusher, Marshawn Neyland, out of Western Michigan with their second-round pick. They take another lineman, Cooper Beebe, with their third-round pick. But there is a significant lack of sizzle here around the Dallas Cowboys and a team that needed to find a way to get better this offseason. I just don't see it. And then you have these... I don't know. I think it's fair to say, if you're a Cowboys fan, that you're a little bit nervous about Jerry Jones as we enter these next years going ahead. As he's an aging owner, and they are obviously he has a huge voice in that room. The press conference heading into round two for a team that was desperate for running back help. Let's listen to Jerry Jones here when he talks about a running back prospect and does not do it after they take the prospect. They do it before.
I was curious if you could give some kind of assessment about Jonathan Brooks as an NFL prospect and how his recovery is coming from ACL surgery.
In my 30 years, I thought it was the best interview that I've ever interviewed with a player. He's outstanding. And he's just outstanding. And he's a great football player. We got him high. And he's a good player.
Show him the board.
Well, I got it out of here.
I'm sorry. Who's on the far right in that on that dais?
I had the same question.
That's Will McClay, their personnel director.
Okay, great. So that's important. If you play the rest of that clip, I'll just tell you, Stephen Jones is next to him, Jerry's son, who literally elbows him and says, hey, show him the whole board while you're at it. Yet Mike McCarthy just sitting there essentially like a corpse, like, I cannot believe this is what's happening. And then you have the personnel director who ends the interaction with media with, and there's a lot of other guys we like too. So you get basically give away how desperate you are for Jonathan Brooks, who then, of course, goes to another team. And I don't know if it's direct, if it's there's a correlation, but they take Jonathan Brooks 46th in the 2024 draft. So the Panthers jump up and get Brooks. And I just thought that was like a snapshot into the world of the Cowboys right now. And the reporting that's coming out today that the Cowboys are now interested in a reunion with Ezekiel Elliott tells me everything about an organization that's needs to find a way to get over the hump. But if anything, I feel like they've backslid a little bit this offseason.
I am with you. And like I think the Ezekiel Elliott part of it is uncreative. It is embarrassing because here's the thing. I think Jerry Jones over the last 5-6+ years and his team kind of quieted some of the criticism about it being a bit of a Wild West operation because they drafted really well. And they made good decisions. And I know, you know, in the past, he always like overextended his own players and paid them too much. But they were a team that drafted well. Like this offseason has been a complete disaster. And there's, you know, when it was 2 months ago,
complete disaster. That feels a little. I don't want to.
I don't think it is. Here's the thing, because this is a team. This is one of the 5 or 6 teams that went into the offseason viewing themselves as a Super Bowl team. And verbalize, because here's what annoys me, because you don't have to say anything. You don't have to say what you just said in that press conference. You don't have to say what you said months ago where Jerry Jones is telling the world and everyone's going to listen and talk about it. We're all in. We're going to do everything. And I'm tired of talking about the subject at this point, too. But it's like you're going to say that and then you do nothing.
Look, I think they ended up with a guy in Tyler Guyton that might not be ready to play right away. And yet they need him to play right away after trading down 5. But to give them some credit, they picked up an extra third round pick because like they might need another starter to start this year. And that's Cooper Beebe. So it's like, okay, you traded down. You maybe did get an extra potential starter at guard in the third round. We'll see if that works out or not. But the Brooks thing is crazy to me. Not only did that lose me a sandwich, my Jonathan Brooks Cowboys that direct hit, which I thought was going to happen. That was before the draft. I made that pick. And then he said that the Panthers the Panthers traded up. Of course they're aware of that. And they're probably aware that the Cowboys are heat-seeking a running back anyways. And Jonathan Brooks, if he wasn't coming off a torn ACL, I mean, his tape as a receiver and just how he can move his feet as a big guy is pretty great. Like, he could have been a potential first-round running back if not for the injury. And, yeah, you gave away the game, and you don't end up with your guy in the second round.
Jarrett turns 82 later this year. And I just... If you haven't seen it, and you can check it out on YouTube if you'd like, where the show also lives, just seeing the way Stephen Jones especially was reacting, and Mike McCarthy, I think, was in a catatonic shock at that point, how they reacted. To the Cowboys' credit, and this is to Jarrah's credit, to Stephen Jones, to Mike McCarthy, the last 3 seasons, 12-5, 12-5, 12-5, and a lot of that has been going back to strong drafting, and they've been able to become a top team in the NFC. It's just, I can't shake that feeling. And this, now I don't want to step on the around the NFC in 48 minutes, but my overall thought is like they already had the window was the window. Mm. And now they missed it with Dak and CD and Micah when they were younger before second contracts. And now they're stuck in this kind of, I don't know, purgatory. And they can't really improve the team because if they want to keep the core together, they're going to have to pay all those guys. So you're kind of stuck in between, and then you have to and you're picking late in the draft because you keep on having a great regular season record. So they're kind of caught in this twilight zone. It'll be interesting to see what Cowboys team we get in September.
Yeah, the biggest concern for me is the change of tone in the Dak Prescott talks, that the Cowboys are kind of putting it all off. And Dak, when asked about it at these charity events and stuff, has a very different tone too. And that's an awkward situation. He has a no tag clause in his contract, which is massive as he hits free agency. And yeah, they could decide to just like rip the Band-Aid off. And you're right, they've drafted well, but they didn't last year when I thought they kind of reached for need. And I kind of think if you look at this draft, they kind of reached for need too.
Let me just final point. When you look at their depth chart, because I really thought they needed to add a playmaker to their offense. They don't get the running back they wanted. You still obviously have CD there, although you have contract drama around him. You still have Brandon Cooks, who's a very solid guy who found his footing. Right now you have Jalen Tolbert as a starter. You have a sixth-round pick, Ryan Flournoy, taken. You have a seventh-round pick last year, Jalen Brooks, on the roster. Kevontae Turpin is there as an option. It's not hot. It ain't hot on that depth chart once you get past the super duper star and Brooks. So Cooks, I should say. All right. How about another winner or a loser? Anything you want, Greg.
Well, just because you mentioned it with Jonathan Brooks, just a quick winner on Bryce Young. I thought the first round pick, you know, moving up to take Xavier Legette was a little risky. He's a risky prospect. He kind of reminds me of Jonathan Mingo, the guy they took at 40th overall last year. Is like, he's not really a guy that gets open, but when you see him running in the open field, he is just like a sight to behold. I would like guys that could get open. I know that they're hoping the offense, you know, helps you out a little bit more. But then in the second round, you get the best running back in the class with Jonathan Brooks. You get a tight end in Jatavion Sanders. You spent all that money in the offseason on the offensive line, just like an exorbitant amount of money. It's like, okay, we're trying here. Like, they went into this draft trying to help Bryce Young out as much as they could. Jatavion Sanders is a pretty explosive tight end. Maybe it takes them a year to get ready. But like, okay, three more offensive pieces. We spent much on the line. It's like, at least they're trying. Go Bryce Young. Don't give up.
I'm with you. I thought they had a good draft. And I mean, I think it makes sense because we saw the Bills do this with Josh Allen in a hurry. And this was the Kyle Shanahan thing, wherever he went, was like amass weapons and get your kind of offense together quickly. And I like what they've done for Bryce Young this offseason. There are some question marks about parts of it, but it is wholly better than where it was a year ago. Yeah. And it's like, you're going to get a better read because I don't give him a total mulligan for last season, but it's just kind of hard to assess who the player is going forward based on that, you know, a total mess of a campaign where the coach is getting fired. You're already on your second. I like the idea of you're bringing a quarterback in Canales, a guy that's saved two quarterbacks in a row. That's a good fit. And then they're putting him in a position where we can assess what Bryce Young is. And then you got to make a hard decision if he's not improved.
All right. Give us another one, Mark.
So I'll give you a winner with a loser folded inside of it. I thought the Bengals had a good draft, and maybe you don't love all of it, because I know, you know, we're communicating and we're hearing from, like, you know, the Wessling brothers, and they seem kind of hot and cold with certain stuff. But like, if you get the right version,
they
of
weren't
Amarius,
big on Amarius Mims, which I thought was a shot worth taking at the spot they did.
I'm with you. That's the thing. I think if you get like the upside, and I think they trust that they can do that, then that's a good pick.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll do some more winners and losers. Just getting warmed up here. We'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. We're going to do some winners and losers coming up in a second.
Ooh. What was that? Why are you talking so fast? Why are you rotating in the chair, too? You were giving a little audio fantasia there for us. I like that.
I don't know what fantasia means, but I love it.
Welcome back, everybody. We are going to get back into winners and losers, and we are, let's talk about a guy that's, you know, he's been in our life for a while now. And he's always struck me as a unique individual. And it's hard to really put your finger on it, what it is that makes him such a unique individual. What makes Chris Ballard tick? Indianapolis Colts general manager since 2017. I guess I will say that it's good to have a Chris Ballard in the league because he is going to come at you and he's going to surprise you sometimes. Sometimes we'll be, by the way he looks, like he's growing his hair out, like 2011 era Tom Cruise right now, like Tom Cruise Scientology video leaks era hair.
Or 2011 Tom Brady. I feel like he's back in that,
which is
bit.
By far my least favorite Tom Brady hair era. That one threw me for a loop. But anyway, with Ballard, it's like, okay, you're always going to keep us on our toes. And with that said, he kept the entire media on their toes when he sat down after the Friday drafting of a wide receiver, Adonai Mitchell, who is a very talented player who I guess fell down or fell off some draft boards because of reports. This is important. Reports of character concerns, okay? And a lot of these reports were not necessarily strongly sourced, but it stuck to Mitchell, whether he deserved to or not. I don't have the data or the research to tell you whether this man should have been getting dinged with character concern reports. But what Chris Ballard doesn't like are people throwing it out there and not putting their names behind it. So hit it, Chris.
I don't know. I mean, I read some of the bullshit that was set on TV. I mean, just the typical, excuse my language, our typical league, unnamed sources, you know, bad interview. That's such bullshit. I mean, it is. It's bullshit. Like, put your name on it. I'm tired of, we tear these young men down. These are 21, 22 young men. And if people out there can tell me they're perfect in their lives, it's crap. It's crap. This is a good kid. And, you know, for those reports to come out, like, you know, I said it last year. It's bullshit. I'm sorry. I apologize for the language. I don't, but I do.
So he obviously that's mad. He's big mad there about it. And I did like, and we'll learn more about Mitchell and his NFL journey here now. But he was asked, Mitchell, the receiver, was asked to describe his game later that same day. And this was good. His response, the best. That's like a Liam Gallagher type response.
That is a wild journey there. And look, I think it worked out for Ballard. He ends up taking Laiatilatu in the first round, the top defensive player on his board, clearly, because he was the first one off the board. And knowing this is a deep receiver class, and to have a guy like A.D. Mitchell, who everyone expected to go in the first round and has some real number one receiver type traits, fall to him, it worked out well. And Ballard's mad. And I mean, it's a friend of Lance Zierlein, who's a friend of the show. So that's a strong character connection there. I think the issue with Mitchell, though, and I'll put my name on it, and I don't know about the character stuff. There probably was stuff out there I didn't see. But my issue was, when you watched him, it just like looked like he was going half speed like a lot of the time. Like, he just didn't go all out every route. And so that's not a character issue, and there can be conversations about why that happened and why that didn't, but that's going to take him off some people's boards of like a guy that you didn't feel was giving 100% every single snap in college. And there might be reasons for that, and clearly the Colts don't mind, and he's probably going to play right away over Alec Pierce. He's a better version of Alec Pierce.
Ballard definitely, I mean, we've got a lot of, you know, track record with him. He certainly likes traits and players. He wants big, strong, lanky, tall guys, and like the Colts are built around him. And like in other organizations, like, I'm not sure he would have survived because they misfired on the quarterback situation post Andrew Luck so many times. But I will say this about Ballard, Dan, like, he looks about 12 years younger to me right now. The hair, the skin, I don't know what's going on. It's like there's a bit of a glow up happening there. And like, it's, yeah, we like, I know you've had like Ballard personality. I don't know what it is, or just like the overall vibe of him, you know, the favorite type of frog thing too. That's out there. But like, he to me looks about as good as he's ever looked.
What was the frog thing?
What's your favorite type of frog?
What's your favorite type of frog? We know that.
We should just gaslight Mark and say we have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, that would be absurd. The two of you were on that hill together because of a combine experience. I understand that. But like, would you say that he, do you not agree that he looks younger and fresher? And this is one of the biggest takeaways I have from the draft.
Sure. Years. Yeah, I think he looks good for his age. And I think going back to that, standing in Indianapolis, Greg, you and I next to each other, and watching him address the media for the first time all those years ago, like, this, what happened today is kind of hammering home that, like, what that initial observation, like, this guy just feels a little different. He's got a little something to him, a little piss and vinegar, a little bit of an unpredictable nature to him.
Yes.
Maybe he's a perfect GM for ownership with Jim Irsay, you know?
Something you can't quite put a finger on.
Can't do it.
But Eric Ebron did. This story got passed around so long that Eric Ebron responded to it and said, this is the same dude that trashed my name throughout the league. Said I quit after I played knowing I needed surgery. This is cap. He's saying that Ballard's just grandstanding about A.D. Mitchell. And I think he's the worst GM ever. So that's Eric Ebron's opinion.
Okay.
I was just like, okay, I didn't know this was a thing, but I guess it was a thing.
All right.
I have one connected to that Colts team, because I thought they were connected. That the Colts and Chargers were winners for the same reason, just that they passed on wide receivers at spots that they absolutely could have. And if the Chargers had Malik Nabers or the Colts took Brian Thomas Jr., like, I would have liked those picks. But if you look at the combination of what they got, the Colts got Latu and Mitchell, and then the Chargers got Joe Alt, like a really great tackle prospect, and you get Ladd McConkey in the second round. You make those decisions not in a vacuum, knowing that receiver is deeper this year, that the two-pack you're getting with your two premium picks is going to be better, perhaps, if you pass on the wide receiver early. And I just think the Chargers had a nice week. They also got Junior Colson, who's probably going to start right away. Just a David Harris clone is kind of his MO, and he played for Jim Harbaugh. And it's just like, it's just so nice to have Harbaugh. I mentioned the quote the other day, Randy behind the virtual glass. Let's play the other Jim Harbaugh quote, talking about his brother texting him during the draft.
And my brother texted me, you know, after the pick, and he said, that's who I would have taken if he was at that pick.
What was your response to your brother's text?
Checking the phone.
Let's see.
Checking the phone.
Oh, I haven't texted him back yet. what would be an appropriate response there? Thanks.
Thumbs up.
I'll just go with the thumb.
Joe, you've got it.
I'll give him a pound.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Like my dad, Keith Hansis, I feel like in the last 18 months or so started rocking with emojis for the first time. And it's a jarring moment. And I think Jim Harbaugh using emojis is not something I could ever admit. And I think he was playing along there. He had no idea what they were talking about in terms of putting a thumbs up. He probably wrote thumbs up. That would be a move. That feels like a Jim Harbaugh move. I'm glad you brought up the Chargers there, too, because I agree. I think the only thing I was nervous with the Harbaugh hire was that he's such a huge personality and character at this point that he's almost too big for a team like the Chargers, and it could lead to some chaos with him being unchecked power-wise and some strange stuff going on. Like, for instance, you know, answering the phone when the Patriots called about a trade of Justin Herbert. And I just feel like it's been a sensible I know it was a little dicey there in free agency when they essentially dumped their top two wide receivers, but that's also, there's a logic behind that. Those are 30-something receivers with injury histories. And to take the best offensive lineman prospect in a couple of years, number one, McConkey feels like a very Jim Harbaugh guy. And as much as we all can argue about Justin Herbert, about at what level and how special truly is Herbert entering year five, like, give him weapons and give him stability and give him a good offensive line, and you're going to get some real hard answers. So I think the Chargers are set up well here.
Yeah, it's kind of like we talked about the Commanders and the Bears feeling different to us. And the Chargers, to me, you know, year after year, like no matter who was in charge, seemed to be snake bit by the same football god ill luck and misfortunes. They just seem the same to me always. And it's like they feel very different to me now. And I think like Ladd McConkey, and we've talked about him a little bit before on the show. I mean, Justin Herbert's going to love him. And I think that Alt is an absolute home run pick. So it's like the Chargers, to me, there's some different energy. And I think the Harbaugh thing is not just, you know, a bunch of headlines and a bunch of personality. Like, there's a real plan here.
And I identified him with as like an aging man who very often like sees a text I enjoy, kind of look at it, laugh, but I'm in the middle of something. Mm-hmm. And then I completely forget to ever respond. And then I just figure, well, I guess don't ever respond. It's fine. You know, people, they're going to have to understand it. It's a totally different vibe with the Chargers, though. Jim Harbaugh, and we got to get to this at some point in the offseason, is living in an RV park next to Greg Roman. I mean, that is just, it's amazing content. And the Chargers have built out some content.
I think we discussed it when you were on vacation.
Yeah, we did bring that up. But that doesn't mean that we can't dig deeper into that topic. I have a winner that I'm like a little hesitant or flat out kind of scared to bring up on this show. I don't know if I should or not, but it's up to you guys.
Please. I mean, now you have to.
I mean, I know it's a little on the nose, but if you're the Eagles and you get Quinyon Mitchell falls to you.
But we already did this. I named them winners on Wednesday.
Okay.
But there's more to it, I would say. I think that, like, for instance, some of their other picks, like Will Shipley is a very interesting running back. Like Cooper DeJean, who I think is a loser in terms of money, because I had him going like at 20, and a lot of people had him going in the 20s, but he falls to the second round. He goes at 40, but it's a great landing spot. So he's kind of a winner. It's kind of if you ever like were younger and you took a job that felt better to you, that had a little bit less money attached to it, and you made a good decision. On top of that, like they re-signed A.J. Brown. We talked about that. But Jeremiah Trotter is the we've mentioned that. We'll get
the
in that.
The Sessler like, move of later. The draft.
But it's like they didn't trade up to get stuff that they had to overspend for. Quality fell to them. So there's some luck there. It's not all Howie Roseman is a demigod from a different part of the solar system. But it's like luck, but smart decision making. They got better. Like their secondary quietly needed a lot of work, I thought. And like, they addressed it, and so it was just a very solid draft for the Eagles, where you're walking away thinking, like, this was a chaotic end of the last season, but we've kind of reset the board to some degree at this point.
There's two conversations, and they're separate conversations, so that's important. Like, my take that I've shared, that I feel like NFL media in general is filled with a lot of copycats and people that just crib the notes off people who are seen as pacemakers in terms of opinion. I think that is a epidemic that that as somebody who, listen, you may think Dan gets a lot of things right, a lot of things wrong, but I tell you, every opinion I have is my opinion. And sometimes I think, and it's something that actually comes from how I feel and I share it, there's too much out there of people aligning themselves with people whose opinions are respected on a higher level. Greg's part of the problem with this. And I think what, no, you're not a part of the problem. But Greg, you are one of the tastemakers, by the way. And that's a credit I'll give to you. I know that's why it makes you a little uncomfortable I bring it up. Because Greg has...
I don't think people are consciously Greg has thinking some influence like this. They just like the same sort of team building that like Howie is into. We've been honking about the Eagles since 2017.
Dan is right about that. There is a Howie hero worship element that, like, yes. I'm not even on Twitter. I don't and tweet, but I do check it out once in a while. And I think Dan's got a point there.
And you have a platform, Greg, within the football cognoscenti, and you're not alone. And there are other people that think Howie and his team are really sharp. And so that's part one of this. Now, part two is a theory I have. And I think why this keeps happening every year. I believe the Eagles are very online. This is a theory I have. And the Eagles, so... When all of these boards come out about these draft boards, about who's a good value, who these mocks, isn't it funny that the guys that are widely mocked in the first round and then fall to the later rounds, it's always the Eagles that are the ones that get those guys. So I think the Eagles are the decisions they make are very similar to the mock draft community, the top mock draft community people. And then when they take that guy that, oh, wait, he was supposed to go 23, but he's going 38. And they, you know, everybody's like, oh, my God, the Eagles done it again. Maybe the Eagles aren't doing any work at all. And they are just like basically studying like Daniel Jeremiah's top 50 or Mel Kiper's big board. And they're taking whoever's the highest left pick. It's like the guy in your fantasy league who doesn't know anything, but just takes best available player. And then you're like, whoa, how did that person last into the third round? I think that's a little thing that's going on with the Eagles. So I got multiple theories out there. Greg, I respect your football knowledge. You are, I'm not saying you're part of the problem, but it's people that then follow the people that are deemed the intellectual tastemakers of football universe that are on my radar. Good job, Eagles. It looks like you got better. And you better get better.
I love this theory because it just shows what a boondoggle it is for the roughly 37 men and women, mostly men, let's be real, in suits, in a white shirt with no tie. There's like an Eagles uniform. That is the most crowded draft room I've ever seen. There's 30 dudes with suits on, but all they're doing is printing out the consensus big board. And you know what? There's actually a real answer to that. You might be onto something here in reality, because the Ravens and the Bengals are like this too. There are a lot of analytical thinking that, like, if you go by the consensus big board, if you go way off, for instance, the consensus big board, like, over time, it's been proven production-wise, like, the consensus big board actually does outperform basically anything else that you could do. You really could draft off. And the consensus big board, Arif Hassan, who's been on our show, he puts it together, is from, like, 100 big boards. And you're kind of right that if you do go off that, over time, it's been proven, like, that's pretty effective to maybe not be like the Jaguars, who are always taking guys like 50 spots before they were supposed to go.
I think you make a compelling point, Dan, with your theory. And there is probably an element of truth to everything you're saying. But the other way you can go in the draft is be a team like, you know, like we talked about this a bunch the other night, but like the Falcons that takes Michael Penix when no one thought you would take him there. And then they took a defensive tackle, you know, next that like people are saying, wait a minute, that guy's meant to go in like the fourth or fifth round. And it's like suddenly things start to look nonsensical, slightly dark, slightly crazy. And it's like that fan base, that front office is thinking differently and not thinking the way the public thinks. But I mean, do we like that? You know, I don't know.
I think I've made my point on the Falcons clear, but like I think the Eagles are very well run, and not overthinking things, I think, helps you a lot. I also think there's the NFL. Now forget about the cognoscenti. The NFL is also a copycat league in thinking a lot. And when a player starts dropping down the board, I think there's a lot of teams that go like, oh, if so-and-so doesn't like him, why should we like him? And to the Eagles' credit, I don't think they think the same way. I think if they like a player, they go and get him. So I guess the overarching theory here is that the reason why they keep on being the belle of the ball is their draft style, like, and their draft methods and methodology connects with what everyone's obsessing about for 4 months with their mocks and all the things that they're obsessed with. So when the Eagles make the pick that everyone's been spending weeks and weeks about these certain players, it's like, yes, the Eagles, they did
yeah,
it.
You're
they,
right.
They've legitimized not just their roster, but me.
You're right. But Greg, I'd ask you a question. Like, why do you think that Cooper DeJean fell? I think that was a genuine surprise that he fell that even that far into the second round. I think he can do a lot. He's a good return man, which matters a lot this, at least this season, as a, you know, in today's NFL, it's like he seemed like almost any team could use him. And it's like a lot of teams did not agree with the value.
Yeah, I think that maybe people viewed him as a tweener and they didn't quite know where to put him. And like, honestly, being a white cornerback, I honestly think that's an issue. Like Bomani Jones talks about it a lot, like joking. It's like white coaches, let your athletes stay at cornerback. They always end up moving them to safety. They never end up getting a chance to stay and play at safety. Like this is a crazy athlete, but he did show versatility, and maybe just people didn't quite like he didn't fit the profile, and they saw him as a safety and a guy you move inside who goes later. By the way, you share your opinion, Dan, with Bill Barnwell, who said he responded to something I said about Howie that like you know, Howie's done it again was trending on Twitter. And he was like, as my curse with Howie is he could, and I think he's basically saying the same thing as you in a different way, that I think he's consistently a B+ GM. And when he's down, people don't like him because he's sort of defending him. But mostly when he's good, people are mad at him because he points out, you know, the bad picks, like the Andre Dillard pick and the Jordan Davis pick, which he got a lot of credit for, the Kelee Ringo pick last year, he got a lot of credit. It's like he has plenty of misses too.
He was hot. You mentioned it last week. He was hot for Zach Wilson. I mean,
right.
Some of this stuff.
You know who's going to be coming the Eagles? And just a quick winner is the Lions. Like the Lions secondary and the Lions confidence, like their chutzpah right now, that you trade up for Arnold. That was a great pick, Terrion Arnold. And then you stick and you take another corner who was by far the highest guy on the board for Daniel Jeremiah's big board, Enos Rakestraw Jr., and you just kind of take the value. And between those two guys and Carlton Davis, you've really remade your cornerback group, and that's great. But the thing that makes me realize, like, they're a little getting high on their own supply in a good way. They've been confident to take bold picks. Is they traded a third-round pick next year to draft Giovanni Manu, a player that was not invited to the scouting combine, with pick 126. So they paid a third next year for pick 126, a 360-pound tackle from the University of British Columbia. And they think it's like their Jordan Mailata and that he wasn't going to necessarily fall that much further. And that's great. They have conviction about it. And they believe like they are the team to turn him into gold. But that's a gutsy pick to trade a third for a guy that, you know, it was playing in Canada.
Mark, you got one?
I do, and it's a player who's already in the league, and I think it's Brock Purdy, because we were in this 48-hour window where, like, I think if the right, you know, situation had been presented, either Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk are not on the team anymore. Instead, they're both on the team. They're not going to get traded, and you add Ricky Parasol. So it's like you actually just added a weapon during a weekend when, you know, cap, money, whatever situations, relationships could have taken Brock Purdy in a very critical third year with a Super Bowl window open and taken one of his biggest weapons away. So, you know, some of this stuff that we had talked about for 40 days, like Ayuk and Samuel came up more recently, but it's like in the end, like what the move that doesn't happen could end up being the biggest move for one of the best teams in the league.
Did you see Ayuk texted the Niners? Maybe it was Lynch or Shanahan after the Pearsall pick. He's like, that pick was fire, not going to lie. And then I saw somebody on Twitter pointed out, like, that's a text sent from a guy that feels confident he's not the guy that's going to be traded if a trade gets made.
Exactly. He sent, like, an IG story, too, like, dancing around this weekend. I think he is going to get paid. But Deebo spoke to Diana Rossini and said the team, he didn't say it, that the team told him about possibly trading him or not. But she asked about the reports, and he just said, I know what's going on. It is what it is. I'm good with staying with them. I'm chilling. And the way the the 49ers talked about it afterwards. I think they were probably open with him that, like, hey, we did have these conversations. And the way they spoke publicly, it sounded like that door is closed now and that they're all going to be there. And so you're right. Purdy's a big winner.
This one's kind of tough to classify. Tony Khan, who's the right man, right hand man of Shad Khan, Jaguars owner. First of all, I believe he's still wearing the neck brace, and that doesn't surprise me. Let's start
here.
He was today. Yeah, because when you suffer a neck injury and on a pile driver,
you're still peddling this one.
It's not the idea that you're going to get better in a day. It might be months. It could be years. So I hope Tony's okay, because you know, despite Greg following, you know, tens of thousands of people that are wrestling fanatics, you seem to not understand that the bumps are very real.
Well, here's another Tony one.
It's still on the, real to me, damn it.
On the Pat McAfee show, he was getting on Tony Khan. He said, if you're going to wear the neck brace and sell it, stop moving your neck around and walking around as if you're not injured at all. Like, while he's wearing the neck brace, Tony Khan's just looking around and having a normal day. So Pat McAfee, a wrestling, you know, enthusiast, employee, was saying, you got to sell the neck brace better.
See, this is when, and I was just throwing you flowers, Greg, for saying that you are part of the Illuminati of the NFL media sphere. But now I'm going to have to give it to you a little bit the other way. You're coming off a little uninformed, because Tony Khan is with, I believe, the AEW, which is a upstart
wrestling federation. I know the rival things, but it doesn't change the point.
And let me throw it to our own network. This was wild. Mike Garofalo and Steve Weish with Tony Khan talking about all matters of not really Jaguars, just kind of Tony Khan, which is part of my greater point. Let's listen in.
And we're up against a really evil juggernaut. WWE is our competitor. That's who we're facing. AEW, like the Pepsi of pro wrestling. WWE is like the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling. And I'm okay. Really proud of what we do down here.
All right, Tony. Real quick. What's the prognosis? What are the doctors telling you?
Well, you know, to be honest, I think you're going to have to tune in to AEW to find out what they have to say.
There we go.
Yeah.
That was Mike Garofalo and Steve Weish, our friends with him.
Steve Weish, so uncomfortable in that moment. Anytime I don't think Harvey Weinstein's name has ever been uttered on NFL Network in any capacity. So you see the on live television, Steve, the bells going off there. So yeah, that Pat McAfee is paid by Vince McMahon. So I'm just saying, like, obviously he's going to be critical of Tony Khan and not try to legitimize his injury, which is seems very possible that it's
I think
a
it was good scouting
issue.
When I watched Tony just killing it.
Thank you, sir. And one last thing, Mark, I want to throw it to you on this. Now let's say for a second that it is all a work, right? And there's no neck injury, and it's just a promotional tool. How does this make the Jaguars look? I like fun stuff. I love when people in football don't take themselves too seriously. There are on some levels limits. And when he's in the war room with the neck brace and then he's giving interviews and dropping Weinstein on NFL Network, and like, it almost starts to feel like, are we, I don't know, man. Like, what were your thoughts, Mark?
Yeah. Because I thought some of the more notable images from the weekend were, when he's sitting there, and I'm with Greg that there's a lot of neck movement underneath that neck brace, but you know, he's turning
maybe
to his
he's
right.
Getting better.
Yeah, he's turning to his right, but to his right is Doug Peterson, yes. Former NFL quarterback and head coach, a large man who's, you know, serious. This is a very serious pivot point in the organization.
His career is on the line.
History. Yeah, and you got Trent Baalke, who's, you know, trying to mend fences after, you know, what happened to him in a press conference a couple days ago. And it's like the looks on their faces were my favorite part of the draft on one level, because it's like, wait a minute, what's going on with this? Like the son of the owner and a neck brace set. And we've had him on the show and he's entertaining. And like, I think it's all for sport on some level. I'm not sure of the accuracy of the injury based on the industry that he's trying to apply to us. I'd tend to side with Greg that it's not accurate.
For his vanity project, which is this wrestling federation, it's gold, obviously.
Right.
But it almost kind of overshadowed everything the Jaguars were doing. It just, that felt tonally, I would think maybe a little off amongst Jaguars fans at the very least. Jags fans, let us know.
I would point out that, you know, we're only a couple years removed from Mike Vrabel's teenage or 20-something-year-old son during the Corona draft dressing in a full-body onesie that was quite revealing and strange, and that happened on national television, too. So,
Was that during COVID?
Yes, it was like
nothing
when they
counts
were going
during
to,
COVID.
Yeah, no,
going nothing
to,
counts.
Right, maybe
Belichick's dog was taking picks. You know, he drafted Tyquan Thornton, I believe.
I have one last loser, and then I'm going to throw it to you guys for your last ones, and then we got to get to our sandwich props.
Oh my god!
And this one's quite serious. We were just having a little bit of fun, but this is serious. I feel weird even saying it because I've been, you know, a vociferous defender of this individual, which a lot of people have found ironic. But so it's going to be misleading at first, or seem that way. Bill Belichick was a loser, and I don't like it. I don't like anything about it, like, because I think that you guys did this to him. And I point to everyone. You put him on a television set this weekend with a fake Mel Kiper. You have him asking Adam Peters questions about his day two draft plans. Like, ask Bill Belichick, so what do you think you're going to do tomorrow? You want to tell us? You know, the exact type of inane, insipid queries that Belichick would dismiss in his heyday. I believe this is crass. This is beneath him. This is tragic theater, is what it is. Is this what you meant when you said the greatest coach of all time needs to take a year off to better understand the modern game? Does this tap dancing entertain you? Because I see a legendary figure in our game debasing himself at the altar of lazy groupthink. Stay in the picture, they say. Show a different side of yourself. Smile. Or else, imagine putting Vince Lombardi through these same paces. Imagine asking Bear Bryant to sing for his supper. Shame on you. Shame on all of you. That's it.
I mean, I love what you said there, but
but you didn't.
On Saturday morning, like, I went back and watched about 2.5-3 hours of that Belichick performance, and you are right that there were a lot of antics on that set, and at times he seemed a little disembodied from it. But I thought in a different way it helped Bill Belichick, because he was awesome in his analysis, and I thought he looked up to Pat McAfee and gave McAfee his correct spot on that show, doing it for the first time. And so I see where you're coming from, but like, I thought Belichick kind of shone bright. I thought he did a wonderful job in a tough setting, though, because it was weird to have Belichick sit there and have to, like, it's not unlike, you know, a young boy in a neck brace with the coach 2 feet away. It was like he's having to deal with the second best Mel Kiper parroter out there on the scene. So it was,
yeah,
just, that
be
was
real.
Strange,
like,
but
are you referring to Frank Caliendo as number one?
Well, I think Joey does the best Mel Kiper for my money. Like, I love Joey Molinaro, I think his last name is, but he's incredible.
Oh, wow, he called him by his first name alone. That was pretty good.
Well, he does all sorts of stuff, but he's nice. He's a, in a way, Mel Kiper's a winner. You're on your own network, and people are, like, you know, trying to do impressions of you on your own network. I thought that was kind of like a Mel Kiper fanboy session.
Go ahead.
You know, we're a show that appreciates the lighter side of the game. We can get a little wacky. The fact that Belichick could do that, I think it's great. And look, those breakdowns were serious. No other broadcast is going to let Bill Belichick just go for 3.5 minutes on every prospect. Like, I've been trained to watch these broadcasts and just TV in general, that, like, once he got through about 45 seconds to a minute of it, I was like, oh wow, this is going on a while. It's going on and going on. But it was cool. It's cool to hear Belichick. Like, if you were dorky enough to just want to hear him dive deep on all these players, like, they gave him the runway to do it. I'm sure they gave him a massive bag of cash, so I don't feel bad for him. He seemed to be having fun. And there was some bad, you know, let's call it for what it is. Not every editorial decision we've ever made has worked. Not every bit we've ever made is great. Like, the fake Mel Kiper was a disastrous idea. Just like, not good, not funny.
There's a song by The Who called Behind Blue Eyes, and I guess while everybody saw Bill tap dancing there, I was looking behind those blue eyes and I saw a guy in his own prison that could not believe he wasn't in a war room trying to find a way to win yet another Lombardi trophy. And I'll stand on that. I'll stand on it.
I thought he was having fun.
I'll stand on it. All right, guys, what do you got before we move on?
I have so much. I'm going to go speed
round. I'll stand on it.
I'm going to go speed round. Winner speed round. And I'm going to do a loser speed round too after Mark. I don't care.
Singing for his supper.
Cardinals hope. 7 picks in the top 90. They're the first team since the 1991 Cowboys to have that many picks. They quietly had a really solid, I would say B plus, A minus, considering where the picks were last year in terms of their rookie class. 4 like real contributors, 7 picks. I don't know if they're all going to work or not. Like, I'm not going to break down like if Darius Robinson is a day one great player. But Marvin Harrison Jr. adds juice and like just a lot of guys in the top 3. So there's a lot of hope. I like the Packers always take guys that like don't have a lot of pop. It's meat and potatoes, but they end up playing right away. Jordan Morgan's going to play right away, their offensive lineman. Their linebacker, Edgerrin Cooper, second round, probably plays right well. They had another second round pick at safety. Javon Bullard probably going to play right away. Marshawn Lloyd, I liked him. He was DJ's top running back. He's a little buried at that position, but he'll play eventually. And then they make the pick of the draft. I don't know how Michael Pratt from Tulane fell this far. He changed the entire program. Maybe the greatest player in the, in the history of the program. And a legit quarterback. I will put sandwiches on it that he will outlast at least one of these first-round quarterbacks in the NFL, that he's going to have like a 10-year-plus career. I get why he doesn't have a big arm. Like, why? Maybe there was medical stuff. I'm shocked he fell to the 7th round, but at least a team that knows quarterbacks well picked him up. So the all around, I think, a nice meat and potatoes draft by the Packers.
I thought
that's good. That's what they needed, right? Like, yeah. This is a team that's really loading up now, and they're ready to make a real attack in the NFC. You don't need to take big swings; just continue to build the roster in a sensible way.
Yeah, I think their running back stable looks really interesting right now. I'm going to give you a TBD because there are open questions about this team, but you mentioned the Cardinals, and I'm with you. There was a whole different feeling around them. They had 8 picks at one point when the Browns had made only 2. And the one thing that did pass with the ending of the 7th round is that from a draft pick angle, not a money angle, we get that, but from a draft pick angle, the Browns are free of the Deshaun Watson trade. And I think Andrew Berry is a winner. Outside of the Deshaun Watson situation, that through these seasons where they've been hamstrung without first round picks, that they've had good drafts. And I think that they took a defensive tackle, Michael Hall out of Ohio State, who's got a lot of upside. They took a guard out of Zach Zinter out of Michigan, who looks like a badass to me. But then they had no 4th round pick, and then they're picking a bunch in the 6th and 7th round. And it's like, It the cost comes home at some point, not only for Deshaun Watson's contract, but the fact that you're one of the few teams in the league that for seasons in a row cannot build through the draft correctly. And I think Barry's done a good job navigating that in free agency and through the draft itself. But I still wonder if this is one of the biggest mistakes an organization that has a lot of mistakes on its resume has ever made. And a lot has to happen this season with that quarterback for people to feel differently about him. There's some weird stuff going on with the whole experience, but from a draft angle, it's not Jesus. Fun to follow a team that has nothing going on in the draft. And the reason for it isn't because of something that you can really get behind.
Well, especially on a weekend where you're watching like the Steelers, I think they've added a lot of good draft picks over the, like, they sneaky had a great draft last year. They added 2 offensive linemen early, too, that I happen to like higher than others. They take Peyton Wilson, this linebacker, and Roman Wilson, like another good mid-round. It's like you're watching the other guys in your division add, you know, quality players, while the Browns have been sitting it out for a couple of years.
Correct.
It's over, though. Here's the good news. At least from this portion of the NFL calendar, it's over. The draft compensation now is all rolled through with the Texans and Browns. Now you just have the quite messy issue of Deshaun Watson himself, who is entering year 3 now. And the idea was we were going to be able to stomach these couple drafts of just being wiped out because we got this guy that was going to be warts and all a franchise star at quarterback. And he hasn't been. He's been an injury riddled mess, and he's been inconsistent when he's been on the field. So yeah, I think where things stand right now, if things don't change, I think it becomes the worst trade of all time. He's off to a huge head start. The Browns are in that race. All right.
One more speed round here.
Yes.
Winner, Drake May. Next five picks after him were all offense. They didn't mess around, including two receivers.
Jaylen I love Pope. When teams do that. Yeah. One of my favorite draft tropes, team that needs doesn't actually do the best player available. They just say, we are only drafting one side of the ball. It's a little dunderheaded, but also I love it. It makes sense as well.
Yeah, Jerod Mayo was like, we feel pretty good about our defense. So they added receivers and they added offensive linemen. The Rams are just like a tougher team. They add your guy Blake Corum in terms of in the running game, and then they pair their first round pick with another Florida State kind of run stopper, so just like better on the run on both sides of the ball. Brian Flores, sneaky winner. They've really added a lot on their defense all offseason. Like, he was kind of playing without really a full deck last year. Aiden O'Connell, winner. Somehow they didn't draft a quarterback, and I do not believe in any world where Gardner Minshew starts 17 games. So Aiden O'Connell will be back in our lives. Wouldn't surprise me if he plays quite a bit. Loser, Saints fans who have to be worried about Marshawn Lattimore getting traded again because they drafted a cornerback high, although, you know, it was a good pick, Julian McKinstry. And then I thought the Bills taking Keon Coleman with the first pick of the second round, they just have a bunch of guys who all win over the middle of the field. Like, he looks like a slot receiver, and Kincaid is that, and Shakir is that, and Samuel's that, and that would be a good spot for OBJ. Darren Waller's chances of returning, that's a loser. They drafted a tight end. It really seems like he is going to retire. And then people who drafted Devin Achan in way too early fantasy leagues, loser, because they drafted yet another speed demon at running back, Jalen Wright in Miami.
Greg, why are people drafting fantasy teams in like late April?
They're crazy. These best ball leagues, I don't know. Yeah. People are talking about like average draft positions. I don't know. They just can't stop doing it. I don't know what it is. Best ball leagues, I believe.
I hope everything's okay with Darren Waller, because not only has he, you know, having this moment where it looks like he's ending his NFL career. I saw a report out there that he like suddenly ended his marriage. There seems to be a lot going on with Darren Waller, a guy who's had issues in his past in terms of his personal life. So it looks like the Giants are ready to move on, and that was not a good trade either. All right, let's take one more break. We come back and we're going to do some Go Get My Lunch recap. Stay right there.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we are back. Let's close this thing up. Let's empty out. We had some odds and ends just from the draft. There was a fan, a super fan, I feel like there's a good chance he listens to the show. Mark, if we could get his name, because our international listenership is strong. He got to announce a Panthers pick.
Oh yeah,
in the draft from Detroit. Let's listen to how he ended that.
Guten Tag, Detroit from Germany. With a 101st pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Carolina Panthers select Jatavion Sanders, tight end, Texas. Keep pounding.
I mean, I just love that guy. Love everything about him.
Yeah,
love him too.
And oh, I love God, that as a nice supplemental keep pounding drop for the show going forward. Keep I also pounding. Have Brandon Graham. I love teams hating each other. I love like division rivals just like talking ish because they don't they have an opportunity to and they don't care if it's going to be offensive. Here's Brandon Graham announcing a pick in Detroit.
A-E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles! And y'all already know, all day, Dallas sucks all day.
Whoa.
Let's go. Let's go.
And I like it. I always enjoy it. And Greg, you have one as well?
I do. CJ Stroud is a revelation. Incredible analysis on a like live first round reaction show for Bleacher Report. It was hosted by Adam Lefko, who I got a chance to meet once. Like, great guy. Like, CJ Stroud seems like an incredible football analyst. He was breaking down like the Ricky Pearsall pick, wishing why he had it, and just explaining all this stuff. But I especially liked when he was not afraid to confront another analyst on the desk there, which was Micah Parsons, talking about the best division in the league.
Everyone was a playoff team.
AFC North was the best division in football. Washington was argued that Washington was in nothing, bro. What are you talking about?
That meant the Giants.
The Giants either. What are you talking
what
about?
What do you mean? They lost to the Eagles.
That's 2 years ago.
Yeah, but I'm saying going into it. Fam, you don't know what you're talking about. Going into last year, no one in the planet except for Micah Parsons thought the NFC East was better than the AFC North. You can't argue that. I can, bro.
Oh, wow. I love it.
And that was just like a snippet that went on for about a minute 45 and he just filleted him. And in Parsons' defense, he was talking about like going into last season, but he was off base and Stroud was on point with all this stuff. You can tell how much that guy knows ball and loves ball.
Well, I also think what I love about him is he, you know, Micah Parsons is an incredible player, but there was like absolutely zero willingness to play ball with his comments. And it's like Stroud reminds me of like, my son Colton is like a huge soccer fan and a soccer player. And if you bring the wrong take or mention the wrong player, he's just like, no,
dismissed.
Wrong. You're wrong. You're completely wrong. And it's just like, I love it. So I totally think he was on point. And like, big loser, the C2 test that a year ago were telling us that, you know, CJ Stroud didn't have the acumen or the wherewithal to lead an NFL team. It's like, check you later, test.
Well, it should be noted, I haven't heard much at all about that in this draft process.
Well, it lost so much, it changed to the C2 test. It was the S2 test, I believe.
Oh, the S2.
Tesla can't even remember. But you're right. Well, it didn't come up one time this year. Right. It's dead. It's dead.
They took a dirt nap.
While we're on Sun Corner here, before we started recording today, we have the Royals, the AA Royals that my son plays on. I'm one of the coaches on the team, and we were a little shorthanded getting warmed up, so I jogged over there. It's only a block away from the house, and thank you guys for bearing with me during that. So I got the team ready for the game, and then my son Harrison was starting on the mound. So I was like, all right, I gotta watch the first half inning, and I don't know where he gets it. I can't imagine where he gets like this a maniacal competitive streak in him, but. He struck out the side for starters. So good job by you, Harry, in a big spot. But also the other team that we were playing, the Expos, who somehow the Expos are in this league. They're not the Nationals. Mm-hmm. The team was chanting. They were doing a chant from the opposing dugout that went, pitcher, pitcher, look at me. I'm a monkey in a tree. And I kept on seeing Harrison kind of his eyes darting over. He didn't like that they were doing that chant. And after he struck out the third batter, this is a memory that will stay with me forever. He walks off the mound just staring at the dugout
of
the opposing team to the point where he starts just backpedaling back toward our dugout, staring at them after striking out the side. No smile, dead-eyed like Max Scherzer. Like it was an incredible moment that showed that he might be as nuts as his dad, and I love him for it. Shout out to Harry, my co-coach Jeff Grundell, and the rest of the staff. We are we've been fighting through it this year, but that was a nice moment.
You shut that other team up. That's what I like. Maybe he's like a young Albert Bell in the making. That would be wonderful.
I'm a big celebrations guy. You know, I'm always loving the celebrations, and it is fun. And I feel like, you know, Walker played his basketball game today, and there is a fine line of like, when do you get too old to be? Because if they hit like a couple shots early, like some of the players, you know, in the 8, 9, 10 age, it's like, oh, they're going to show the other team up. They're going to do some celebration. They're going to do some dancing. At some point, the other team is going, you know, that other team might come charge. Jack, who knows? At some point, like you have to maybe dial it back, but it's fun to watch little kids do that.
I would not pick against Jack, even if 9 kids ran at him. If he is fired up, he's got a wonderful temper on him. It's the one thing, a difference between when we were 8, 9, 10 and kids now, they all know how to dance.
Right.
Because they all like play Fortnite and stuff, and they have like, they're all like Fred Astaire now. It's absurd. So I can imagine, especially in basketball, if you hit an 18 footer and you're 10, you're going to be doing something completely elaborate. All right. Shall we turn our attention to the annual game of chance, skill, go get my lunch, you nothing burger? Pitcher, pitcher, look at me. I'm a monkey in a tree. Unbelievable. All right. This year, we had some success, but as usual, not a ton overall. Let's start with Mark Sessler. Mark, you did not hit on a prop this year. Let's go through them. Eagles select Jeremiah Trotter Jr. I feel like, Mark, we tried to warn you on this. Like, right. You don't have to make it two parts. We can't give you credit for having half. This is not horseshoes. This is not hand grenades, because you also added, and the Chargers select Blake Corum, who did go to SoFi Stadium, but to the Rams.
Well, I did like, you know, I went in knowing this is hyper-specific and that I would pay the price. I still felt, I'm not saying it from a sandwich angle, but when Trotter went to the Eagles, I felt good about that, because it came from instinct and also a little bit of, you know, listening to some whispers. So there you go.
You deserve to be happy with yourself. That's good. You've done it 2 years in a row. Porter last year, Trotter. It's a thing, especially in like day three, when teams are, if they're kind of stuck between son of franchise legend and Joe Blow, they're probably going to take the legend. It's just smart thinking. You just went too hard. You went too specific, but, you know, maybe next year.
You didn't know Sean McVay was going to sweep in and annoy Jim Harbaugh and annoy Kyron Williams' fantasy owners next year.
The Cowboys select a quarterback within the first two rounds. This was saucy. We took you on it. They ended up taking, I believe, a tackle and a defensive lineman, was it?
Yeah.
Did they take a quarterback, period?
I don't think so.
I don't believe so.
I was hoping they would be a spot for my guy Pratt in the later rounds, but didn't happen. You know, they got Trey Lance, their quarterback of the future.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. They took Guyton, the tackle out of Oklahoma, Nealon, the edge, Cooper, Beebe, a guard. They did not take a quarterback.
Yeah, they didn't take a quarterback.
All right. Up next.
Well, I had a third one there, I believe.
A major non-sports related news story takes, quote, wholesale precedence, close quote, over the draft. There is a lot of important issues going on in the world right now. A lot of troubling stories out there. I believe the Republican presidential nominee is currently on trial, for instance. There's just stuff going on. But no, nothing seemed to pop up over the last 3 days.
Nope. I think I might retire that personal flavor of like major news story overtakes what we're attempting to do with our work, because it doesn't seem to ever occur.
It's going to happen. It's a war horse. One of these years, and then you'll be sad you didn't.
All right, Greg. So you went 0-3. Greg,
You went 4-9 overall, according to gogetmylunch.org.
Yeah, with all the takes and non-takes. You'd say Patriots select Drake May. Was this, did you do this on Monday, or was this an older one?
We did it on Monday, right? Yeah.
No, but I mean, this I don't remember this. Oh, yeah, that's, you said you're going to go straight forward with it. That was very chalky. In fact, only Mark took you on it. I did not take you. So you make one sandwich.
You know, throughout the process, he was plus money, like less than 50-50 to go third. People just thought, I don't know what they thought, like that to exactly to the Patriots. Even as late as Monday, it's funny that by the time we got to Wednesday, then it was totally expected.
Why did I take you on that when in my own mock draft, which I, you know, in theory believed in, had him going to the Patriots? Absurd.
Yeah, that was a tough one. That's a bad beat. Also a bad beat, the owner of the Cowboys letting every team in the league know, you better go get Jonathan Brooks because we're in love with him and we're going to take him in the second round of the draft. So the Cowboys select Jonathan Brooks with pick number 56. He went about 10 picks before when the Panthers traded up. Your thinking was very sound, Greg. In fact, Jarrah's speech, monologue, while misguided, makes you look good because it tells you that that's exactly what they're thinking. However, it costs you sandwiches in a big spot, two sandwiches down.
I think only two running backs got taken in the first three rounds. Like, that was Brooks mid two, Trey Benson went early three, and that was it to the Cardinals.
And this one, Mark, we're going to have to kind of just dissect this one a little bit because there's elements of it that are straightforward and it's, we're all having fun. It's just a game. And then there's some more troubling aspects to this.
Okay.
Jerzon Johnny Newton is selected within the first 31 picks. That was a sandwich prop that Greg put out there. He really loved this defender, and Dan and Mark took him on it. And we were kind of caught off guard by the Newton prediction. Here was an explanation from Ian Rappaport on Friday why Newton fell out of the first round. Let's start here, which cost Greg the sandwiches.
Johnny Newton, considered by many to be a first-round talent. So how does a guy like that fall to the second round? Still dealing with the effects of a Jones fracture, had surgery in January.
He's got any medical red flags? Got any off-the-field issues?
No.
Whoa, wait a minute, though. You mentioned the Jones fracture. You and I dug in on our laptops after we did. Remember, we wanted to go do our own homework.
Well, that was so, after that. And you know,
what is the suggestion, that we take this off the board?
Maybe a playing fast and loose.
What I'm trying to say is, first of all, it was a rainmaker too, so you're costing people money, and you're costing Susie braces.
Sure,
but you also threw out that prop, and when we asked you if there were any medical red flags, you told us no. So you fed us erroneous information. But I just want to say, like, that's a little bit dirty pool on top of everything else.
I'd agree.
But I fed you erroneous information that hurt me. I made it more likely that you wouldn't take it, when I clearly was operating from a position of ignorance about his foot injury, or else I wouldn't have done the thing in the first place. I mean, you're correct to point out I was an idiot, but I was not being a devious idiot. I put myself in. You think I would have gone? Think I would have gone that pick? I just watched the tape and I was like, this guy's a top 10 pick.
When Mark and I are trying to decide whether to take you on the idea of him going top 31,
yeah.
If he does have a red flag medically,
yeah,
that's going to make Mark and I more confident that,
oh, I see,
we'll take you on the wager.
Oh, I see. Yep.
So when you
you did take him on it.
Only after Mark and I did some research on the fly. But if we would have, as I typically do with what you say, Greg, by your word, we would have been cost sandwiches and we would have been misled. I think there's something else going on here, potentially.
The worst aspect to it is then you have to start to, you know, dial back through time. This very episode,
yes,
to start and wonder what Greg has said about anything. It's like, do we have to go do our own research on when he picks a winner or a loser? We have to go, you know, check those facts too, Greg. So it's a troubling.
This is some Kaiser Soze stuff going on here.
I mean, I own up to my mistakes. this was a space. I think I knew that at some point, and somehow it was totally gone. I would not have put, you know, little Ollie in Worcestershire in England's Christmas gift on the line if I had known about that necessarily. But I still can't believe it. And history is going to prove me right. All the NFL teams are wrong. Johnny Newton's going to have a great career. How did you let this guy go?
You finished 6-6 when you factor in all the sandwiches with one right. Finally, I almost had one of the all-time sandwich weekends. Let's start with almost. First-round selection order, I said I thought it would be QB, 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 wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, tackle. It ended up being QB, 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 wide receiver, tackle, wide receiver, tackle. So it was Jim Harbaugh and the
Only
Chargers.
One off.
Yeah, one off. Not trading out of the pick and then a team, or not picking a wide receiver, or a team trading in and taking a wide receiver. That ultimately cost me. So I got 6 out of 7, but I had to get them all. So it cost me 2 sandwiches. I had the Chiefs trade up for a wide receiver. They indeed did do that and took, I believe, Xavier Worthy. And that trade, in my mind, I saw them moving up to, you know, the middle of the first round, or even getting really bold and moving up into the top 10. But they only moved up a few spots, but it was within the realm of the wager, and they went and they got their man. So I got 2 sandwiches there. A Pro Bowl player / All Pro / All PFF team player is traded prior to midnight Friday, April 26th, 2024. You know, that the San Francisco 49ers stuff was very interesting, but I should have kept it open for the entire draft process. It wouldn't have mattered anyway, but nothing was done by the end of night one. So I lost 2 sandwiches. And then at the end of our Thursday podcast, when we recap night one, I actually, I had one extra one. Detroit drafts a player present at the draft. I said, there's no way, given the amount of people that were going to be there, the celebration, that the Lions were going to, you know, throw it to someone's living room in central Arkansas. And I was proven absolutely correct. Because they made, who they pick in that?
Terrion Arnold,
and he walked, and the Lions fans went mad, and we had a great moment for everyone there, and I got 2 sandwiches there.
That is an example of, you know, people can pick apart what we get right or wrong here or there, but that is an example of you having a hand on the pulse of not only the league, but how show business works, and how, you know, this was the biggest crowd ever. Live crowd ever. Detroit can own that. And there's no way you disappoint the biggest crowd ever. And you were absolutely correct about that. And well done.
That was
Thank
pretty
you,
savvy.
Mark.
And they needed a little luck for Arnold to drop down. I guess they could have taken Darius Robinson. My guess is by the time they traded up for that pick, I think there were only 2 players left, him and Darius Robinson. But maybe they just would have, just for showman's sake, taken Robinson no matter what. That is an impressive 2-pack of ones you got right there, Dan.
I went 9-4.
You are the winner.
I went
9-4.
You are
the winner. Ayuk could have helped you out. There was one trade. Trades kind of were the loser. We talked so much about trades leading up to the draft and nothing happened. But your Jets traded Jonathan Franklin Myers to the Broncos for
right.
a future 6. So that was the only veteran trade I can think of.
And Nick Fortier does awesome work on gogetmylunch.org, which is a living document of the history of this podcast in many ways, has changed some of the layout to the all-time standings and clarified it a bit. And I don't know if these standings are updated, the all-time standings, Greg, but I am now 5 games clear of you in the win column, 235 and 205 all-time, 53.41%. You're second at 52.51%, 230 and 208. Wes, and we miss Wes always, especially on weekends like this. He finished 163 and 155, so he finished 51.26%. And Mark, you are at 196 and 225. You're sitting at 46.56%.
I mean, okay, but I think if we were to track why that's happening to me on some level, I always have to parse this, but I never took anyone on sandwiches early on in this, and that's a bad strategy. That's on me. And then some of mine are just, you know, you're shooting for the moon.
And let me just throw, to be fair, I just want to in give this you... particular edition, you came in last
I think I've like almost regularly come in last, and I think you'd have to question my overall team building and strategy. I'm not above that.
And I'll just do this. Will be a nice roll call as we wrap up another season in a lot of ways of around the NFL. Here are the guest pickers through the years. There, by the way, Eric Roberts, who's correct, he's 3-0 in ETP, and he doesn't want to pick because he doesn't want to mess with his perfect record. But he's not the only perfect record. Lakeisha Wessling, the wonderful, beautiful Lakeisha, wife of Chris, 5-0 all time. Did anybody know? 5-0 lifetime. Here are the other names who have made sandwich props through the years, and people that go back all the way to 2013 with us know all these names. Lakeisha, Roberts, Cynthia Freeland, Patra, the Irishman, Connie Fox, and even 25 and 25 all time in the sandwich props. Connor Orr, Handsome Hank, Kyle Brandt is 3-3 in the sandwich props. Claybon, TD, our original producer, Erica Tamposi, the gold standard. Ali Bunbury is 0-1 lifetime. Kevin Danger Hansis, my brother, 0-1 lifetime. Spice Rack, Z Drizzle, Zach Dressler. I loved Zach. If you know, you know. Gravedigger went 0-7. And Sydney Carlson, the great, iconic La Sid, 0-9 lifetime. We might have to get her out of Utah just to get one right, to get her out of off the schneid.
I mean, 0-7 is and 0-9 is somehow better than 1-13 from the gold standard. 1-13 is just a preposterous record. I had lunch with the gold standard recently. Good guy. Good buddy.
Love that dude, too. We've been very lucky to work with great people. Speaking of which, you might have heard or read that Andrew Siciliano is no longer with NFL Media, which is a major loss for the company. And whatever comes next for Andrew, that company gets better, while our company didn't. Shout out to Andrew, and hope to see him in Hermosa Beach in the near future. James Palmer also, who's been on the show, and he'll no longer be with the company, and bigger and brighter things ahead for him as well. It's been a long year. It's been at times a difficult year for NFL Media, but those are two names we wanted to mention on the show because they were obviously huge contributors to what we did.
I think also, like, any fan out there has logged hours watching both of those gentlemen and Andrew on, you know, every type of football show there is all season long. And a lot of times you're wondering, like, who are these media people? Are they good people behind the scenes? Are they quality people? Or is it just all, you know, the way the negative stories you hear? It's like, no, Andrew Siciliano is one of the kindest, nicest people that's ever walked through our newsroom, and literally knows everyone's name, talked to everyone, like treats everyone equal. And James Palmer, who was often not in our newsroom, but whenever you'd see him at events, like the same goes for him. And it's like, you're losing not just incredible professionals, but high quality people. And they're not, you can't just replace these people. You don't replace them. They're not there.
You know, I've watched a lot of NFL Network over the years. Rich Eisen obviously had the massive lead of just like hours logged on NFL Network for a decade. I bet Andrew passed him at some point. That Andrew Siciliano has literally been on our air more than any person, I would guess, ever. Part of it is because of the name of our show. Remember, we changed from Around the League to Around the NFL to synchronize with the show that Andrew was hosting, Around the NFL, which lasted a year or two, and then they kind of changed the name to NFL Now. As it happens, we got our name, and he was so welcoming on that. And I told him this, and it's true. Like, there's no one I respected more at the entire company in terms of the way he does his job and what a good job he does. And you heard that echoed from so many people. He's just an awesome host, just an awesome guy.
All right. Okay, so we'll be back Tuesday and Thursday. It's our Around the AFC and Around the NFC specials, and we'll hit, obviously, on every team and where they look and how they stand as they come out of free agency. And now they've come out of the draft, and they head into the offseason and the programs, and then the wheel turns and turns and turns. Thank you to everybody for listening. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.